Topic tonight is priorities. Figuring out priorities, what we're supposed to do. Small group. So what does a priority mean? What is a priority? Okay. What's the shoresh of priority?
Prior.
Prior. Right. Something coming prior to something else means something coming before something else. So I want to take a look at a Rashi in this week's Parsha, Parshas Matos Maaseh. We're going to take a look at a story together. Could be some of you have seen it before. The summer Parsha is a little bit harder, right? We didn't learn them as carefully. So, this is what happens. Reuven and Gad are on their way to, they're on their way, or all of Klal Yisrael is on their way to enter Eretz Yisrael. They're really quite almost there. Next week's Parsha, Moshe starts his final speech in Parshas Devarim, Sefer Devarim, before they enter Eretz Yisrael. And in this week's Parsha, Gad and Reuven approach Moshe Rabbeinu. They approach Klal Yisrael, and they step out of Klal Yisrael. It says, "Vayigshu elav vayomru," and they say, they approach, and they have this whole request that they want to live on, right, they had just conquered territory, they have Yarden, on the other side of the Yarden, not on the side of Eretz Yisrael. Right? What you have to do is you have to cross over the Yarden to get into Eretz Yisrael. They had conquered the territory before that. And what they wanted was to stay where they were. Does anybody know why? What was the reason that they wanted to stay there? Anybody know? So the Pasuk says, yeah? Pasuk says, "Umikne Rav haya levnei Reuven levnei Gad atzuma od." They had a lot of livestock, lots of animals, lots of property, and in order for them to be able to take care of their animals properly, what they needed to do was have a lot of space. They needed to get a lot of space, and they saw the land that we just conquered, Eber Yarden, this space the other side. This has a lot of potential because there's so much grass, it's good for our animals. And Moshe at first gets very upset. He thinks that, wait, hold on, what's going on here? You guys don't want to enter Eretz Yisrael? Are you afraid of the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael? You're afraid? You're doing the same avera that somebody did previously. Who did that previously? Meraglim, excellent. Meraglim, 38 years earlier, had done something terrible. They were afraid of Claudius. They're afraid of, sorry, not of the people in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't want to conquer. So he says, "You guys are doing the same thing. This is horrible." And they explain, No. Let us explain ourselves, please. It says, "Vayigshu elav." This is Lamed Beis Tazayin. "Vayigshu elav ayomru gidros tzon nivne lipneinu po." We're going to make gidros tzon. We're going to build these fences, these corrals for our sheep, lipneinu, and for our livestock, ho, that's what we're going to do here. V'arim l'tapenu, and we're going to make cities for our taf, our offspring. So they said, they explained, we're going to go into the land, we're going to fight a good fight, we're going to help our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, that's part of the plan. But at the end of the day, what we want to do is we want to live over here, just not in Eretz Yisrael proper, but just outside Eretz Yisrael. That's what we would hope to do. But we're not afraid. It's just that this makes more sense for us practically. But we're not afraid. We're going to help, and it's not a problem. Okay, so now we're going to take a look at a Rashi over here. Rashi says something very interesting. He's quoting a Midrash in Tanhuma. Rashi says this. He says, "Chasim hayu al mamonam yoser mibneihem uvnoseihem." They cared more, they took more pity on their money, on their property, than on their sons and daughters. How do we know? Shekdimu miknehem letapam. Because they mentioned their livestock before their children. Right? Reading the pasuk again, the pasuk says, they said, Gizros son nivne lipneinu po, we're going to build fences for our animals. We're going to build cities for our children, for our families. So we're going to build stuff for our livestock first, and then they're going to do things for their families. Rashi says, quoting Midrash Tanhuma, the Chazal say they prioritize their property over their children. Amar Lamehem Moshe Lokein. Moshe says this is not so. Asuha ikar va tafel. Make the ikar the ikar and make the tafel the tafel. Make the main thing the main thing. Banu lechem tchila arim letapchem. First you should make cities for your children. The achar kein gidrus letzonechem. And afterwards you do that. Right? That's what we see later on. The pasuk says in Chaf Dalet that when Moshe responds and says, okay, you could do this, what does he say? He says, banu lechem arim letapchem ugderes letzonechem. He switches the order. So basically what Chazal did over here, we followed, Chazal picked up the order in the Pesukim that Reuven and Gad said, they mentioned the Tzon and the Miknah first, and then their Taf, then their children. And when Moshe responds to them, he reverses the order. So Chazal are telling us what's going on in this conversation. They're saying, you know what's happening over here in this conversation? They were prioritizing their property, and Moshe was giving them Musa for it. Now, there are two big questions I have on this. First question is the mentioning of the livestock first really an indication of them prioritizing their property over their children? Is it really? Why do they mention the livestock first? You can give me a nice, simple shot answer. Why do they mention the livestock first? Because that's what the conversation was about. The conversation was about them wanting to settle here because it's better for their livestock. So the reason they mentioned it before the top is because the top was an afterthought because it wasn't really part of the main discussion. The main discussion was about the land that's most fitting for their livestock. So how is this an indication? Like Moshe gave them Musar. Was the Musar really necessary? The reason you didn't word it properly, guys, Gad and Reuven, you didn't word it properly. You should have chosen your lashon carefully. You should have said that you'll build the things for the cities for your children first, and then they didn't need that Musar. They said, okay, Moshe, yes, that's how we worded it, but because we're talking about that, that's the main topic of the conversation. Question make sense? How is this an indication that they misprioritized? Why did it warrant that Musar? And furthermore, what a condemning thing to say about Klal Yisrael. Right? This, by the way, this is like high-level Jewish people. This is the Dor HaMidbar that entered Eretz Yisrael. They were righteous. This is not the same generation of everything going wrong throughout the Midbar for 38 years. This is the new generation that changed their ways, that learned from their father's mistakes, their grandfather's mistakes, and they were moving on. You're going to tell me that holy Jews put their livestock over their aunt? Meaning, the indication on its own is strange. Is that really an indication? But like to not even be dalat haskus for these righteous people, that they would do something so low. Would anybody trade away their children for property? Anybody in this room? No? Okay. So, like, you think that these great Jewish people, Dor HaMidbar, did? So those are the two problems that I have with this Midrash and this Rashi. So I want to tell you a story from a member of my family. It's a true story. It's that there was a man who was... He met a woman, and he instantly knew she was the right person for him. Instantly knew. And she also had a feeling he was the right person. Thing is that she had a sister who also might have been interested. And this man ultimately married the sister. And then 7 days later, he married the first girl. Now, that was mostly because Lavan did this whole switcheroo, and then they did the whole the trade thing. What that created was strife between these two sisters. So Rachel and Leah had this dilemma that they're both married to Yaakov. I want to point out some themes. It's a story about someone in my family. Great-great-great-great-grandfather. So the theme, there's a theme that maybe you did, maybe you didn't notice throughout Rachel and Leah's life. It's very fascinating. So I wonder if anybody ever thought of these points. It's something that my brothers and I developed together. But if you notice, Rachel and Leah have a lot of reverse, like, parallels in their lives. There's a lot of, like, perfect, smooth trade over in their wants, in what they have, in how they end up, their challenges. Let's start basic. What is the main thing that Leah wants? Throughout the Parshios, in Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, what are the main things, not really Vayeshev so much, what are the main things, what's the main thing that Leah wants? What's the main thing that Leah wants? Yaakov's love. What's the main thing that Rachel wants? Child, children. Okay. Does Leah have what she wants? No. Does Rachel have what she wants? No. What does Leah have? What does Leah have? She doesn't have Yaakov's love. What does she have? Children. A lot. The most. Right? Most of all the others. What does Rachel have? Yaakov's love. Right? So exactly what one wants, the other one has. Okay, but it goes a lot further than that. There's actually a midrash. So I believe that this is like what you see. It's a focus throughout the narrative, throughout the stories of Rachel and Leah. But there's actually a midrash where each one, maybe we'll say that for a minute. The story of the Dudaim. Right? So we know what happens in the story of the Dudaim. Reuven, Leah's son, has some flowers, some plants called Dudaim, and Leah and Rachel sees them. Rachel wants them, and Leah sees that Rachel has them, and Leah says, "This is not right. Right? You took my husband, and now you're taking my Dudaim." And what does Rachel say? What deal does Rachel offer him? It's a bunch of parshas about. What does Rachel offer him? No one? Thank you. Right? She can have, she says, listen, I'll make you a deal. If you let me, Rachel says to Leah, you let me keep those Dudaim, you let me keep those flowers, those plants from Reuven, then I will let you, tonight was my night to be with Yaakov, I will let you have my night to be with Yaakov. And they do the trade. Leah is with Yaakov for the night. Yisachar ends up being born in that union. And that's sort of happens. So, let's think about what happened here. What was Leah's end of the deal? What did Leah get? Well, yeah, so kind of, from Yisachar, yes, but what she got was that she was trying to buy Yaakov's love. She was trying to get that time with Yaakov. Now, what's pshat in the Dudaim? So there are a few different pshatim that are given. One of them, Dudaim, increases fertility. That's one of the big trucks, and a few mufarshim say that. That increases fertility. Rachel saw that. She had Dudaim. She's like, I want Dudaim. I want children. She says, let me have the Dudaim. That's going to help me get children. Another pshah, one I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, is that it wasn't that it was the children, but that there was, you know, when a child goes out and he brings home flowers to his mother. There's something so precious about that. A child bringing home flowers, and he said, she saw the young boy Reuven picking flowers, picking some plants, bringing home for his mother, and she said, "I want that. I want a connection to that. I would love to have a chelek in raising my nephew, who's also my husband's son. So I guess my nephew / my stepson." I want a chelek in raising that. Please give me a son. That's why he says Dudaim Beni, or Ben Chalara. I want the Dudaim of your son. So what she's really trying to buy is a connection to children. She's trying to buy the mother-child relationship. And they do this sale. We'll take a look at the results of the sale in a moment. Go a little further. There's a midrash on each side in which each of the mothers, Rachel and Leah, each give the other one that thing that they want in secret. Right? There's two Midrashim. They're both in Rashi. You're probably familiar with them, but you may have never thought of them like this, that each of them are trying to give each other the other one. So what great favors does Rachel do for Leah, and does Leah do for Rachel? Great favor that Rachel does for Leah. She gives the simanim. What she, right? Just raise your hand if you're not familiar with the scene of the giving of the simanim. Okay. So she gives her the simanim. What's she essentially giving Leah by giving her the simanim? Marriage to? To Yaakov. She's saying, you can have Yaakov. You can have Yaakov. Yaakov is yours. Does anybody know what kindness, what chesed, Leah did for Rachel? What kinds of you rebel? What? How? Leah for Rachel. Leah for Rachel. What does Leah do for Rachel? Very good. Excellent. Right? It's Gemara in Brachos. Rashi quotes it in the Parsha. Not this Parsha. Those Parshas. That she davens, right? You probably know this, like, Leah to some basic multiplication division. She saw that she had a bunch of children already. She already had six children, and the two Shvachos had two children each. So she did some math. That equals 10. That means that Rachel can, and she somehow knew or understood to some degree that there would be 12 Shvatim. She said, oh no, Rachel is going to end up with, I'm pregnant with a boy right now. If I end up having this baby, then Rachel's going to, the maximum she can have is one. So what did she do? She davened, and Hashem made a miracle, and the child became a girl. Hashem judged the situation and made it feminine, Dina. Now we have Dina, it's feminine judgment, and that's what Leah did for Rachel. So what did Rachel gain from this? What chesed did Leah do for Rachel? She gave her child. Aha, right? So Rachel gave, and according to some version, when Rachel gave Leah the simanim, she didn't tell her that she was supposed to be the main wife. Right? So I'm explaining that Leah did not know the whole time. She didn't know that Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov. Right? That's why she has the audacity to say, like, first you take my husband. What do you mean take my husband? I was engaged to him. You're planning to get married for 7 years, and then you married him last minute. Could be that she didn't even know. So that even strengthens this connection. But Rachel does a favor for Leah, and she says, here, take Yaakov. Leah does a favor for Rachel. She says, here, have a child. What I could have had a child, I'm giving it to you. You have the male child. You have one of the Shvatim. Okay, so we see this going like throughout, right? Are you seeing these parallels? You're seeing this opposite parallels. Now, there's actually another point, which is a tragic point actually, which is that they both actually never quite get what they really want, right? They both don't quite get there. Explain. What does Rachel want again? Children. She has a child, and then what happens in labor with her second child? She dies. She doesn't get to experience that raising children. She didn't get to live having children. Child. She had Yosef. And then as she's trying, and while davening for Yosef, while having Yosef, she davened, Yosef, that you should add on, Hashem, listen to the pasuk, you should add on another son for me. Please add on another one. And it didn't quite work out, because during the birth of that other son, she died. What about Leah? So Leah is constantly playing second fiddle to Rachel. So what happens when Rachel dies? What would you expect? Leah is the primary wife, right? But what wife, right? But what happens? What happens after the death of Rachel? Bilhah. The maidservant? Yep. Bilhah becomes the primary wife. Right when Leah thinks finally is my time, that's what happens. It's tragic. And in the story of the Dudaim, I think that's really the key. That's where Rachel and Leah make their priority calls. Leah says, my role in what life, what I want to achieve, I want Dveikus to the Tzaddik. I want to be completely connected and one and united with the Gadol Hador, with the Tzaddik, with the Av Yaakov. Rachel says, more than anything in the world, I want to be able to build and bring children into Klal Yisrael. This is what they wanted. And when they make that switch, that trade, that was a very big indicator of their priorities. I want to fast forward to the end of their lives because I think it's something very, very telling. This is a horror for my brother as we discuss this. But let's think about where did they end up, right? So it looks like the story is very tragic, right? They both died, and right when we thought they were going to get what they always wanted, it slips through their fingers, right? Right? Yes? No? That's what it seems like. But let's take a look a little bit further. Where do they end up? Let's look at where they're buried. Where's Leah buried? In the Maros Machpelah, next to Yaakov. Where is Rachel buried? Far away, right? On the road. Why? What did Chazal tell us? Because she couldn't come into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, another reason. There's two pshatim in Rashi, actually, yeah. What's the other reason? Right. And what's the lesson of Yirmiyahu? What is Rachel doing when she's crying for Bnei Yisrael? What does it say? Rachel, Mivaka, al Baneha, over her children. So Leah is forever buried with Yaakov Avinu. Rachel is forever buried, Mivaka al Baneha, in a way that she can be attached to her children. So we see over here. So it's not so tragic in the end, because at the end, we could say that the symbol of the kever, their last place in this world, is a symbol of what their Olam Haba is like. It's the symbol of Rachel and Leah, everything they tried to achieve, everything they sought out in this world. In this world, they didn't quite achieve it, but in Olam Haba, they actually lived their mission because those were their priorities. And I think, where does that really come from? Do you know another pshat? Chazal saying, it's in Rashi also. Why Rachel wasn't buried with Yaakov? What? That's one reason it's given. Another reason is as follows. It's because of the story of the Dudayim. It says that when Rachel gave away her night with Yaakov, you know what Chazal say? They say, Rachel, you gave away your night with Yaakov. You made light of lying down with the tzaddik, lying down as the tzaddik. You lost your right to lie down for him in the kever. You're not going to lie down with him in the kever because you made light of it. You sold it for Dudayin. You made light of it, so you lose your right to lie down at the tzaddik eternally. Lay away. That's what Chazal said. You know what that means? That means in the story of the Dudayin, Rachel lost her right. Was Rachel upset about that? So if you read that Rashi isolated, you're like, okay, yeah, so like she did a bad thing, but maybe not. Maybe she was just making her priority call. The story of the Dudayin is this priority call, where Rachel and Leah are pressed in a situation, and they say, now we have to decide, what are our priorities? And you know what Rachel says? Rachel says, my priority is bringing children into this world, is to building Shvatim and Klal Yisrael. That is my priority. That's what I want to do. And Leah says, you know what I want? I want to be able to cleave to the Tzaddik. I want to be able to be Yaakov's wife, to take that role, to be in the Maros Machpelah, with Sarah, with Rivka. That's where I want to be. And in that scene, where they made that, where they shook hands and they made that trade, they made a reality that their Olam Haba would be like that. They achieved their goals. Rachel and Leah were tzidkanim; they're very righteous, and therefore, righteous people have their priorities in place and decided. And furthermore, they live in accordance with those priorities. Those are two critical steps. Say them again. First things first, priority, right? The first things first, you need to know your priorities And secondly, you need to live according to them. Righteous, successful people. Successful, righteous people. People who are successful at being righteous. They are people who have their priorities and live in accordance with them. Some people have priorities and, you know, they know what it is, but they don't follow through. Some people don't even have those priorities in order yet. They're still trying to figure things out. But both are absolutely critical. Avram J. Tversky has a story about there's a person who worked for, did like 18-hour days of work. Right? You're like in his office 18 hours a day, and his wife and his children are saying it's too much, you're not having family time, you're always exhausted. And he said, no, I have to. He's like a workaholic. I have to pay the bills, and then some, pay for vacations. And he really pushed himself, and he ended up having a heart attack. And it was very, very close to death. And in the hospital, he had an epiphany that, you know, maybe I haven't been spending my life the way I should be. And he thank God recovered, and he went through a little bit of a transformation, trying to figure out, and he created office hours. He left his work at work and came home, and nothing in his pay changed. His salary stayed exactly the same, which is fascinating. But also, he realized that he was living life more. He was spending time with his family. He was enjoying. He was so much happier in his life because he just figured out his priorities and then built a schedule based around that. He was able to prioritize. And as we go back to the questions in the Parsha, we asked, we said, that's not an indication. The fact that they mentioned the animals before they mentioned the children, that's not an indication. So, right, because that was the conversation anyway. So what I want to suggest is, no. It is an indication. The fact that they were having a conversation in the first place was already the negative thing. Because what's this conversation? The conversation is this. It's certainly better to live in Eretz Yisrael proper, to live in the land that Hashem told us to live in with the Avir to Eretz Yisrael, to live with the rest of Klal Yisrael for 12 Shvatim, to be united together. Of course that's better. But they said, it's better, but on this side, it's better for our property. Financially, it makes more sense. And because of that, because that was the conversation they were having, so then it made sense to mention the livestock first. But it wasn't a slip of a tongue, you mentioned livestock, or you shouldn't mention the children first. No, you shouldn't have had the conversation in the first place. You shouldn't have been thinking, I need to do this for my livestock when it comes to such a great expense for your children. Right, when you're planning out what to do with your children for school, so you can say, well, you know what, yeshiva is a lot more expensive than public school, so finances, my children's future, finances. So what decision would you make? So, of course, but that's essentially what they're trying to balance out. That's what they're trying to deal with. What decision should we make? And they didn't even think about it. They went right to talk about the livestock. This is better. And Chazal condemned them. And Midrash Tanhuma in other places also says like that, you know, they focus too much on that, meaning that it was the wrong approach. They did it respectfully, Baruch Hashem. They did it respectfully, and it was very admirable that they said, we're going to help our brothers and sisters conquer Eretz Yisrael first, and then we're going to come back. But there was still something off about it. There was still prioritizing incorrectly. How could we condemn such tzaddikim, such righteous people in that generation? The answer is because I think it was very subtle. If you would have asked them, if you would have grabbed somebody from God, pinned them against the wall and say, tell me right now, what's more important to you, your child or your property? I'm sure they would say, what's when you ask me such a question? But when it came down to it, meaning that's when it comes down to it, but in normal conversation and making plans, so the decisions that were made did not indicate that. That sometimes you can know your priorities in your heart of hearts, but the way you act is not in accordance with those priorities. And that's where the problem really begins. I once had an experience where I was I was preparing a class, it was a couple years ago in the school I was teaching in. I was preparing a halacha class, a parsha class, but I was on the computer, making a PowerPoint, looking up with all the pictures to put in the PowerPoint, and all of a sudden, I lost internet out of nowhere. And the next thing I know, I'm like running around. Running. And like something keeps flying at me, so I ducked under it. And another thing keeps flying, I ducked under it. I jumped over a cactus. I'm dunking again, I'm running really fast, ducking these vultures or something. I'm jumping over cactuses. Turns night, turns day, I'm going really fast. I notice I look like a dinosaur. And I'm going, and I'm racking the points. I am rocking this dinosaur game. And as I'm like getting like a high score, which can't really be recorded, but I feel like it's a high score, like Nav, I got like 5 days and five nights. I'm like, you know, this whole thing, I'm going really fast now. And then all of a sudden the worst thing possible happens. What happened? Internet reconnected. And I'm like, no! No, I was so close to you. Nav, you didn't see her. I was so close. And I'm like, I was upset, and I'm like, hey, hold on. What just happened here? I don't want to play the dinosaur game. I want to prepare this class so I can go to sleep. That's what I want to do. I don't want to play the dinosaur game. But I lost my focus. I had my priorities, got distracted, lost my focus, and totally made a mistake. It's similar to the Puppet Spine's a muscle with everyone knows this, the chicken schmaltz, the chicken fat, the cheese, the lamb. Does anyone know this muscle? Does anybody know this muscle? It's a great muscle. I'll give you the short version. It's a wonderful muscle. Basically, there's a person who's very poor, and he hears about some certain land far away, and basically this land, the sand of the beaches, the dirt of the floor, is like many diamonds. There are diamonds all over. Yeah, you heard this now? Okay, good. Anybody else? Everyone else heard it? Okay. What's his name? Rav Gav just put out a video also. They made it a movie of it. Yeah. But it's like, it's an old mashal of the Chafetz Chaim. Okay, and so I'll fast forward a little bit so someone you know it. Anyway, he goes across. He like takes like a really, really long journey, many months. He tells his wife, because I'll be back. We're going to be rich. He goes back to this, and saves up a lot of money to pay for his ship there, and he finally gets there. He sees, it's unbelievable, it's true, filled with diamonds all over. He like puts them all in his pockets and stuffs himself with them. He goes up to the counter and of like the local inn, and he says, you put me in the best room that you got, the nicest, most kosher suite. And he says, okay, sure, can you pay? And he says, sure, how can I pay? Takes out like a big diamond, plops on the desk, and he says, can you get this rock off my desk? Like, this is a diamond. Do you know how much this is worth? And he's like, it's worth nothing. It's like, oh, so what's your currency here? And different version of the story. It could be like cheese, or it could be like, I think it was chicken schmaltz. Chicken fat was, I think, the public science version. So the chicken schmaltz was like, oh, chicken fat. Okay, how am I supposed to get that? So you have to get a job. But what happens is he ends up working, he gets a job, and he makes lots and lots of chicken fat. And his few months there, he makes tons and tons of chicken fat. He stores it all up on the boat. Finally, after his like few months being there, he does his 6-month trip back home, and he shows it to his family, and they're like, okay, we can't wait to see what Tati brought home, what riches he brought home. And he shows up, and he has this like, he's like loads and loads. You won't believe what I got. I'm wealthy. I'm the wealthiest man there. And he shows them all this chicken fat, and they say, chicken fat? What in the world are we going to do with chicken fat? It stinks. It's putrid. It's been on this boat for 6 months. And even if it wasn't, I don't know what we'd do with it. Right? What are you doing with chicken fat? And he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And he's like about to pass out. And then he feels into his pocket of the jacket or pants that he originally came with. And there's a few diamonds left. And there's a few diamonds. They're able to pay their bills and just manage to get by, continue to get by. And the nimshal, obviously, says the Chafetz Chaim, the nimshal is that our neshama has its priorities straight. Hashem tells our neshama in Shemayim what we need to accomplish, what we need to do. Torah, mitzvos. And the neshama goes into it and says, got it. Torah, mitzvos. I got this. Chesed, Torah, mitzvos. I got this. I'm good. And the neshama goes into the body, says, Torah, mitzvahs, Torah, mitzvahs, Torah, mitzvahs, Torah, mitzvahs, Torah, mitzvahs. Ooh, yummy food. Ooh, taibos. Ooh, kavod. Ooh, reputation. Ooh, popularity. Ooh, nice hair. Right? And we start, we lose focus, and we start going to all these other things, and other pleasures, and other temptations, and other trophies, and other, you know, and different distracting things. And then what happens is we go to Shemayim, and we say, Hashem, here I am. Honey, I'm home. I'm back after 120 years. So what do I have? Oh, what do I have? Oh, what do I have? Well, let me show you. This is my basketball trophy. Right? This is my, this is my beautiful, beautiful husband, my beautiful wife. This is my fancy house. This is what people think about me. Right? It says on my tombstone, he was a really cool guy. Everyone thinks I'm cool. Right? So I have all these great things. Where's my Olam Haba? And Hashem says, you fool, that wasn't the currency. What was the currency? Then Hashem says, Torah, mitzvos, and then they go, Torah, mitzvos, Torah, mitzvos. I forgot. And then he looks in his pockets, and he has a, okay, he had a short Mishnayah Seder here, he davened Shacharis, the minyan, a few things, so he can get by on the Haba, because he didn't focus what was supposed to be that whole time. And that's a tragic story. Much more, it's the same type of tragedy, just on a grander scale than the dinosaur story, right? The dinosaur game story. But it's the same idea. The idea is that we need to have our priorities in line. We have to sit down and think what they are. What is important to me? And I think, like, especially with a group like this, more or less the priorities are going to be the same. More or less. Right? It's good. Somewhere in the list is going to be Torah, it's going to be happiness, it's going to be family, it's going to be, hopefully, ultimately everything will boil down to Avodas Hashem. That's what everything is supposed to boil down to. But they're basic things. And there are certain things that are going to be more external, and what we call in Gemara, Ahechi Timsa, they're a means to achieving something else, right? Meaning, money. This crew here knows that money isn't an end of its own. Right, we know that. We know money is a tool that helps us accomplish things. Kavod is it's held in some regard. We need a self-esteem. We sometimes need kavod to go move on in our careers, to get respect from people. So we need things like that. But those are obviously not things that you prioritize. Those are things that you do enough of to in order to get what you need and what your goals really are. And the problem is that when we focus on that, we lose sight on what we have the wrong trophies, and our eyes are on the wrong targets, so then we're going to completely miss out. We completely lose the whole purpose of being in this world. So the first thing we need to get is our priorities. What are our priorities? And again, I think that'll be relatively simple for this group, especially if you've been to Israel for a year or two, you've been thinking about that especially. You should have those priorities. Step two. Live according to those priorities. Rachel and Leah had their priorities. They were diametrically opposed. We saw it through the stories. But they lived according to their priorities. There was not a moment where you see that they lost sight of their priorities. And that's where they ended up achieving what they wanted to achieve. How often do we live according to what our priorities are? Every decision we make is part of this big picture. It's part of this calculation. Every single decision we make. It was very subtle, wasn't it, in the parsha? Wasn't it very subtle? They said, oh, well, you know, this is going to be more beneficial for our livestock. And it looked very subtle. It's just a few words out of order. No, says Moshe. It's not just a few words out of order. This is an indication that there's a big lack of prioritizing properly in this story. There's a big problem here. Our decisions, what are our decisions? You guys especially are living in a time where it's big decisions. You have a lot of big decisions. So whether it's where to go for Israel, where to go for yeshiva, to do Shana Bet, to try to find a way to do Shana Bet this year, to what career to go into, whom to marry, what to do, spend your summer. So usually this is a very good option for your summers. It's a growthful environment. It's an environment where you're able to work on every aspect of your Avodas Hashem, essentially. But you have a lot of decisions in these few years around where you're living, and these decisions need to be based on your priorities. Of course, we need to make money for multiple reasons, right? I mean, we want to live, kosher food costs money. Yeshiva tuition for our children costs money. You don't want to have to go around asking for tzedakah, so you need to do some sort of hishtadlus. But at what expense? Your career, at what expense is it going to be of your real priorities, which is avodas Hashem, learning Torah, family, davening? What are you going to lose of what you really prioritize? What are you going to lose? Your decisions need to be based on what do you do in your free time. So of course, part of living a normal life and being a healthy human being is having downtime and having time where you're able to, just rejuvenate yourself and relax. How much of that time do you need for relaxing, and how much of it is you not living according to your priorities? If what you really seek to achieve is to be Talmid Chacham, knowledgeable in a certain area of Torah, in Halacha, in Tanakh, in Gemara, if you want to be knowledgeable in a certain area, so that is a priority. If what you say, for my netios, what I feel my neshama wants in this world is for me to be very knowledgeable in this particular area of Torah. But if you're not spending time working on that, you're not living according to your priorities, you're not going to achieve it. And then you will walk out of life as a shalom, a failure. Because you didn't live according to what you, your own standard, your own definition. Right? I didn't give you any priorities. I didn't tell you what your priorities are. You decide what your priorities are, but whatever those priorities are, whatever your standards are for yourself, whatever goals you have that you want to achieve, short-term and long-term, are the day-to-day decisions that you're making in accordance with that. Do you have your focus? Or are you collecting chicken fat in the land of diamonds? Or are you trying to get the high score in the dinosaur game instead of preparing your shear and then going to sleep? Are you Rachel and Leah? Or are you some of the other failures we heard about? I guess I'm included with failures, right? At least that one night. That's really the goal in our Avodas Hashem. Having that goal, defining our priorities, and living according to them, Bezras Hashem, we should be zochet to do that and bring nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.